thrummed, thrummed. "Go forward," the man's voice said, dry and strained. "Hurry, Tanar." As she stumbled forward, she cried out in her mind, which was as dark, as shaken as the subterranean vault, "Forgive me, O my masters, O unnamed ones, most ancient ones, forgive me, forgive me." There was no answer. There had never been an answer. They came to the passage beneath the hall, climbed the stairs, came to the last steps up, and the trap door at their head. It was shut, as she always left it. She pressed the spring that opened it. It did not open. "It is broken," she said. "It is locked." He came up past her and put his back against the trap. It did not move. "It's not locked, but held down by something heavy. Can you open it?" "Perhaps. I think she'll be waiting there. Has she men with her?"
"Dubi and Uato. Maybe other wardens. Men cannot come there."
"I can't make a spell of opening, and hold off the people waiting up there, and withstand the will of the darkness all at one time," said his steady voice, considering. "We must try the other door, then. The door in the rocks by which I came in. She knows it can't be opened from within."
"Oh, she knows. She let me try it once."
"Then she may discount it. Come, come, Tanar." She had sunk down on the stone steps, which hummed and shivered, as if a great bowstring were being plucked in the depths beneath them.
"What is it? The shaking?"
"Come," he said, so steady and certain that she obeyed, and crept back down the passages and stairs, back to the dreadful cavern. At the entrance, so great a weight of blind and dire hatred came pressing down on her, like the weight of the earth itself, that she cowered and, without knowing it, cried out loud,
"They are here! They are here!"
"Then let them know that we are here," the man said. And from his staff and hands leapt forth a white radiance that broke as a sea wave breaks in sunlight against the thousand diamonds of the roof and walls, a glory of light through which the two fled, straight across the great cavern, their shadows racing from them into the white traceries and glittering crevices and the empty, open grave. To the low doorway they ran, down the tunnel, stooping over, she first, he following. There, in the tunnel, the rocks boomed and moved under their feet, yet the light was with them still, dazzling. As she saw the dead rock face before her, she heard, over the thundering of the earth, his voice speaking one word, and as she fell to her knees, his staff struck down over her head, against the red rock of the shut door. The rocks burned white as if a fire and burst asunder. Outside them was the sky, paling to dawn. A few white stars lay high and cool within it. Tanar saw the stars and felt the sweet wind on her face. But she did not get up. She crouched on hands and knees, there, between the earth and sky. The man, a strange dark figure in that half-light before dawn, turned and pulled at her arm to make her get up. His face was black and twisted like a demon's. She cowered away from him, shrieking in a thick voice not her own, as if a dead tongue moved in her mouth. "No, no, don't touch me. Leave me. Go!" And she writhed back away from him into the crumbling, lipless mouth of the tombs. His hard grip loosened. He said in a quiet voice, "By the bond you wear, I bid you come, Tanar."
She saw the starlight on the silver of the ring on her arm. Her eyes on that, she rose, staggering. She put her hand in his and came with him. She could not run. They walked down the hill. From the black mouth among the rocks behind them issued forth a long, long, groaning howl of hatred and lament. Stones fell about them. The ground quivered. They went on, she with her eyes still fixed on the glimmer of starlight on her wrist. They were in the dim valley westward of the place. Now they began to climb, and all at once he bade her turn. See. She turned and saw. They were across the valley, on a level now with the tombstones, the nine great monoliths that stood or lay above the cavern of diamonds and graves. The stones that stood were moving. They jerked and leaned slowly like the masts of ships. One of them seemed to twitch and rise taller. Then a shudder went through it, and it fell. Another fell, smashing crossways on the first. Behind them, the low dome of the Hall of the Throne, black against the yellow light in the east, quivered. The walls bulged. The whole great ruinous mass